This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everybody. Pete Caliendo, and we are heading to the beautiful island of Curaçao. Some of the best players in the world coming from there. Matter of fact, per capita, more big league players in Curaçao than anywhere in the world, and some of the best shortstops in the world. Incredible talent, great development going on down there. And our good friend, Hensley Mullins, former major league player, three-time World Series champion, bench coach, and hitting coach with the San Francisco Giants, not to mention the manager of the Netherlands in the World Baseball Classic. What a great club he had. Great individual, lots of talent, not only as a player, but as a coach, and soon to be, should be already, the manager of a major league club. This guy deserves it. He's one of the best. So let's not waste any time. Let's get right into it with my good friend, now the current bench coach for the New York Mets, Hensley Mullins. What's up, Hensley? How you doing, man? Glad you can join the show. We are thrilled. I know you're in a warm climate there. Again, thanks for being here, man. Appreciate it.
Five people in isolation as we speak. But other than that, you know, it's pretty safe here in Curaçao. You can't really leave your house. You can leave twice a week just to go grocery shop in order to get gas and, you know, make sure that you stay at home. And that's how we're containing the spreading of the virus here on the island. And the kudos to the government. They've done a great job doing that. Besides that, you know, we're in touch with our players and making sure that they're staying active and not totally derailed, so they're not too far behind once we get started again. So that's what we're doing from here. It's kind of the new wave. Technology yeah. helps out to stay connected to everybody you love and you work with, and that's what we're doing.
What's your advice to young players out there in high school, you know, travel team players, players even here in Curaçao? They're at home. They got to do something. What's your advice to some things they can do while they're at home, whether it be mental, physical?
So I took it back to the days when I was signed as a professional player 35 years ago from this small island. I don't have state-of-the-art facilities to work out at or programs to go to work out, especially in this day and age that you have social distancing, is to find out something you can do at home. There was no social distancing when I had to work out at 18 and 19 years old, when there was only one other guy signed here at this island by the name of Sherwin Sancho with the Orioles. We had to find out how we could work out and be prepared for spring training by ourselves. And that involved jogging in the morning. We did 3 miles every morning, going to the beach, running in the sand, having dumbbells, lifting, push-ups, sit-ups, explosive drills, throwing balls against the wall, doing backhand, forehand, short, everything like that against the wall. And perhaps doing long toss in an open field. So we had a bucket of balls, we were throwing balls in an open field, then going and picking them up, coming back. At that time, we had a cage. We were hitting the cage. We had a net, hitting the net. We also actually went on the field and hit balls in the open field. Later on, when I went to Japan, I played in Japan, I figured out that this was a drill. You know, all 20 hitters were actually feeding each other, hitting into open field, and then they were picking up hundreds of balls. Yeah. And then coming back and doing it again. Without the state-of-the-art facilities, without really needing many people to do it. If you have a tee, if you have a net, if you have an open space, just go ahead and work out that way. It's good enough. It keeps you active. It keeps you motivated to be ready once things start back up again.
Hensley, coming in from the island and obviously making it to the big leagues, and you played in several countries also. What were some of the things that helped you along the way, that, you know, from playing in Curaçao? What helped you get to the higher levels?
Well, I believe the ability to trust yourself and trust in what we do was good enough to be at the top of the top levels. And I think, you know, if you talk about five tools, you worked on running, you worked on speed, you worked on throwing, you worked on throwing the ball up hard and far. You worked on hitting, you worked on hitting for power. So one of the things we had was a old school tire on a stick and a pole, and we hit against this tire numerous times, over and over and over. Just take swings of this tire just to make sure that you're working on your power and your power point. So all these things high level equipment stuff that it might sound like, it helped me get to the big leagues in 3.5 years as a player. So I never forget it. As we speak, I'm trying to educate some of our young players now that didn't have to go through this, or that have state-of-the-art facilities they go to that are closed at the moment. You can still do stuff the old school way that's going to keep you ready to go once we get started again.
You know, and back then, obviously your fields, I mean, weren't the best. Did playing and practicing fields that were not that good make you that much of a better player, the lack of equipment and some of that stuff?
Of course. You know, we have all gravel fields here. You know, we have a few AstroTurf fields now here, like the one you worked on with us when you came here. But most of the fields are still gravel fields. They have rocks on them. If you talk to any of our major league shortstops, which are some of the best in the business, in Anderton Simmons and Didi Gregorius and Ozzie Albies, you can go on and on. Jonathan Scope, Jurickson Profar, these guys, Andrew Jones, always talked about this stuff. You know, he learned how to have great hands by playing on these rock fields.
Mm-hmm.
And bullets, dodge and bat hops, and so that's how we learn how to become efficient, how we use the glove. And you know, we can go way back and still you know, see when we were practicing and doing all these drills, and like we all practice together always still. And you know, guy, bat hops have hit us in the eye, hit us in the collarbone, hit us in the chest, and we jump right back in and give me some more, you know, and we'll try to catch it next time. You know, we'll try to catch the bad hop. So I always have a saying, if the ball, you have to take two bad hops in your body to enable to catch it. So, and that still holds true.
You know, tell us about, because I think, you know, people would be very interested. You know, we talked about it on the intro where per capita, there's more big leaguers in Curaçao than anywhere in the world. You guys got an unbelievable program there. Talk about Curaçao Week, what you do there. I want to get into a little bit of the training, because you get a chance to bring some of these big league guys there, some other coaches. But the organization, you know, how you start developing these players at a young level, what you do to make them better and to enjoy the game.
Well, first and foremost, you know, we're in touch with the Little League system. We're in touch with all baseball that happens here on the island. We try to educate the coaches first. That's why we have a coaches seminar where we try to teach the coaches what they have to teach the kids. And that goes a long ways for us. And, you know, once we get back on the island, we have this baseball week that you've been part of. And we are on the field ourselves with the kids. And, you know, it's fun to watch Didi, Simmons, Scope, Profarb, all these guys, Andrew, stand on the field and teaching these guys how to catch a backhand, how to catch a forehand, how to short up a ball, throw from a catcher at second base, and still put a quick tag on them. And you know, you can go on our website and our Facebook site and watch all these clips, all these footage where our major league players are involved with our local programs and our kids in order to teach them the right way to play the game. And it goes a long ways for us, and we keep coming back because we see the results. You know, we were in the Little League World Series again all the way to the finals last year. We won the international side, but lost to a really good team from Louisiana last year. But, you know, I guess we've been to the World Series 15 out of the last 17 years or something like that. And the senior division, we've won the junior division, we've won all these championships worldwide. And that gives us a gratitude to come back and keep doing it and keep teaching our kids how to play the game the right way.
When you watch your guys working with the kids, and when you guys, you know, the coaches are working with them, what do you think are some of the critical areas that they work with the kids on that allow them to get better? And also, it looks like they're trying to have a lot of fun with them. They're not trying to make robots out of them. They're trying to just seem to be athletic. What are some of the qualities that you see out there that they're working on?
Well, the basics. I think the basics is what allows these kids to continue to have fun. It's not, you know, the high level drills and anything like that. Is we're still instilling the basics into the kids. You know, how to play catch the right way, how to replace your feet to throw, how to catch the ball with two hands or sometimes in one hand. So keeping it simple and making sure that the basics are still, even when we talk about hitting, you know, we talk about you know, going from A to B, the shortest route you can go, and making contact with the ball out front, and things like that, I believe, is what I gather as instilling the right way to play the game with our kids. And also, you know, we make it fun. We make it fun. You know, they have rundowns. They have plays. They try to get the player to feel like you can trick him to get to the next base, and they never do. but things like that. You've seen it. Things like that keeps our kids engaged. You know, it's not boring, and it's not something that they don't like to do. So everybody likes to be on the field amongst our players when we're back home and trying to help them get to the next level.
Yeah, and you can tell they're always active. And folks on Facebook, if you got a question, matter of fact, Steve Johnson says hello, one of your pitching coaches at one time.
Yeah. Oh,
now
Steve?
The German national team coach. When we talk about, you know, I saw how guys are having fun and all that. Now, the game of baseball at times, you know, many times is a game of failure, unfortunately. I hate to use that word, but, you know, you're going to fail. The young kids, you see, so, you know, because you guys have some practice games and games and stuff. What do you teach them to try to deal with that? How do you work with them on that? Because, you know, it's not like other sports where you're not going to fail as much.
Well, right. So as we talk to the kids in groups, we explain to them, listen, you know, 70% of the time you're gonna fail in this game, and that's the great players. You know, some people fail more than that, at 20, 75, 80%, and they're still having good careers. As long as you can deal those times that you're not having success, you know, that makes those 25 to 30% of the time when you are having success much more gratifying. So you're not too focused on all those times you're not doing something good, but you focus on what you are accomplishing and what you are good at. So, you know, not everybody's good at everything. So we talk about the five tools. Andrew Jones was probably the only guy that had five tools here, maybe Albies now, where they can do all five things great: hit, throw, run, hit with power, and field. So once we focus on, you know, having two or three of these toes perfected, then you can make sure you're not focused on only having success. So you're failing, but you're dealing with it because you know at some point you're gonna have some success with some of the tools you have.
You know, you've obviously gotten to a high level. You played at the major league level. You know, coached, managed the World Baseball Classic team, Netherlands team. Not all good players or players are going to be great coaches or managers. What do you think were your attributes that got you to the level you're at as a coach? Because, you know, that can help a lot of coaches around in the U.S., around the world understand. You don't have to get to the major league level, but when you get to a higher level, you've got to have some qualities. What are some of those qualities that help you get there?
Well, you know, patience. You got to have patience. Like we just talked about, it's a game of failure. So you have to have patience to realize that not everybody has the same skill set. You know, once you work with people, not everybody has the same skill set. So you got to work with people on an individual basis. And that's what's allowing me to be a good coach and to be a good major league coach. And if you're not a major league coach at any level, you have to treat people different based on their skill set. And that's going to allow you to train them better. And also have open communication. It's a two-way street. It's not only you talking down to the kid or talking down to the player and telling them what to do. Listen to him. Listen to what he feels when he's doing a drill or practicing something. You might learn something. I learned something every day. I've been in the game 35 years now professionally. And I still learn something on a daily basis from different players, different coaches, different people around me. So, and that's allowing me to continue to grow. You never stop growing in this game. There is something you can always learn, and that's why I believe, you know, I keep going because I keep an open communication line, and I also listen to the player when he needs to talk.
Now, you've had many roles. You've had, you know, you were a hitting coach. You know, you're also a bench coach. Curious to understand some of your roles as a bench coach because, you know, coaches, even at younger levels, have other coaches with them. How, you know, what were some of your responsibilities there, and how does the communication work with the manager?
Well, that's a very good question because a lot of times the manager actually delegates his work because he's so busy at our level dealing with ownership, with the media, with everything that falls in his lap, and everything falls in his lap. So from guys being sick, guys not being able to work, a condition on the field, everything like that. So the bench coach actually a lot of times is in charge or is in good connection with all the rest of the coaches. I know. In my case, every department is running smoothly. You know, the pitching guys, the hitting guys, the infield guys, the catching guy, the coach. As I was a bench coach the last couple of years, I was also the outfield guy, so I was in charge of myself at times. So, but just making sure that, you know, every department is running smoothly so the manager has one less thing to worry about. That's the communication. And then at some point, during the day when the manager has time to talk about all these different departments, if he doesn't have time to go to every coach individually, because most of the times these guys are working with players, the hitting guys are always in the cage, the pitching guys are always outside in the bullpen or doing flat ground, things like that. The infield coaches are always working drills in the infield and the outfield guys as well. So catching guys as well. So there is always work being done. And perhaps that might be the time when the manager has time to elaborate about some of the things that's going on out there. And that's when I come in and I fill him in with everything that's happening so that he's informed. I'm not saying that he never has time for that. A lot of times he is part of those drills he's watching. But, you know, I'm just another set of eyes for him, and I advise in a positive way what's going on, and if I feel like something needs to be different I would say that as well with the coaches. If I think something they're doing needs to be different in terms of what the manager wants. And that's how we roll. I think communication is a big part of the game nowadays, and I have a lot of it. And I think that allows me to bring the group together and keep the group together and make sure that everybody's doing the right thing in terms of having the player be successful once the game starts.
What's it look like on the bench during a game between you and the manager? What kind of the inside look on some of the things that might happen during that time and advice you give the manager?
Well, most of the stuff happens prior to the game. We always have an hour and a half to 2 hours where we game plan. It starts, you know, if it's a night game, we start talking 1:30, 2 o'clock, and we might be talking for an hour and a half, 2 hours before we go out to practice. And we game plan according to the facing that day. You know, say it's you know, the last few years we played the Dodgers 19 times. If we're facing the Dodgers, obviously. You know them better, so it's a little bit easier to game plan. But say, for instance, last year we played Tampa Bay opening day at home. We haven't seen them in 3 years. They're playing this different type of ball with Kevin Cash, their new manager. You know, we're using openers and everything like that. So you have to game plan for that part. So once we do that prior to the game, as the situations arises during the game, you already know what you're going to say, depending on what you talked about before the game. The situation arises during the game. You just advise, hey, remember we talked about this. If this happens during the game, it's happening now, so this is what we're doing. So, for instance, they start with an opener, right? And he pitches an inning or two innings, and he's out of the game. Now you have all your righties in the game against the lefty. Now here comes a righty. Are you going to take all your righties out of the game and instead of the lefties in the game? You got to have a game plan. And most of the time, there is a couple guys that will play against lefties and righties, and there is a couple guys that you will replace during the game. So we'll keep the players ready. You only have 5 bench players in the National League. Maybe you'll use 2 or 3 of those guys to go in the game right away from the second inning or third inning on. And then you have to know that for the rest of the game, you only have a couple guys to pinch hit or to go into the game. So it takes a lot of organizing, a lot of game planning, but that's how it happens, and it happens very fast.
Boy, it's got to be a pressure. And I'll tell you why, because you got to – I assume you're there at times that you want to remind the manager of something it ahead of time, possibly hasn't thought about it. Is there times where you ask the manager, you know, you recommend something to the manager, or like, Skip, you know, so-and-so's coming up, should we do this, or how does that work?
Right. So in my 10 years for the Giants, you know, we have a Hall of Fame manager there that managed 25 years in the big leagues. We all knew his thought process. We all knew what he did like or didn't like, and we all advise accordingly. At times, you know, you make advice something that he didn't like, and he didn't do it. And at other times, you might advise something that he didn't like, but he did. And I remember numerous times where during the 10 years as a hitting guy for 8 years and as a bench guy, I would say, Boach, let's pinch hit such and such. You know, for the pitcher is the bottom of the sixth. We have second and third. That might be our only chance to score against Kershaw. So let's put, you know, I'll put it in Joaquin Arias up there because he's a 300 hitter against some lifetime.
Sure.
And he might go, yeah, let's do it. But if he doesn't get a hit, he'll be like, why you make me do that? We should have saved them for later on in the game.
A lot of pressure there because, you know, you're sitting there going, well, if he doesn't take your advice, you're also...
Well, it's the 70% that doesn't work. You know, sometimes you have to keep that in mind. So, but Boach was great to work with that way. You know, he was intense. There was a lot of times that things didn't work, but you know, as you see his career, as you see our success in San Francisco, most of the time things worked out.
Well, I'll tell you what an honor it must be to be with a guy like Bochy, a Hall of Fame manager. I'm going to ask you about him in a second, but let me ask, Hensley Newlands becomes manager one day, which I honestly believe you should already be. And you've got to look for a bench coach. What's the qualities you're going to look for in a bench coach?
Well, you know, I tell people I was an extension of Boch the last couple of years. I'll be an extension of Luis Rojas here once we start playing this year with the Mets. It's all about, you know, how are you going to deliver the message the manager wants if the manager is not there? And that's the type of guy that I want to be my bench coach, the guy that's going to deliver the message like we're not missing a beat. It shouldn't be that something totally different is going to be said or done because I'm not around. Or even if I'm around, it shouldn't be that the bench coach is talking a different language than the manager is, and you're on the same team. And that's when you create friction. So the bench coach should be always an extension. He should be attached to my hip, which I was to Bosch all these years, which I am right now with Luis Rojas and with the Mets. We talk almost, daily, even though we're not playing, even though he hasn't managed a game yet in big leagues. But I feel like, I'm going to have a lot more to advise this year than I did in the past. And I'm ready for it. And we've been communicating great. And that's what a bench coach should be. It should be an extension of the manager. It should be somebody that think alike. And it should also be somebody that will give me the right advice if I'm not doing the right thing.
You know, 10 years with Bruce Bochy, obviously you've learned a lot from him, Hall of Fame manager. You know, for coaches out there and also, managers, from a Hall of Fame coach, what qualities, what did you see in him throughout the 10 years that made him as good as he was to win all those World Series? Well, obviously he didn't do it by himself, but as a leader, what were the top qualities he had?
Well, the one thing I always tell people, he delegated his work. You know, he didn't try to be the hitting coach. He didn't try to be the pitching coach. He didn't try to be none of the coaches. That's why he had the coaches. And he let them get those guys that had their departments, the players ready to play. And he managed the staff. He managed the players. And he managed the game. Other than that, you know, if he had to bring somebody in because he wasn't liking what he was seeing with a certain player doing a certain thing on the field, it could be running, throwing, pitching, hitting, whatever it was, he would bring that guy in, show him video, he would have the coach sit in there, and he would advise what he would have done in his case. But most of the time, the coaches were doing that with the players anyways, and he only reeled them in as he felt that it fit. If it didn't feel fit, if nothing was ever wrong, he would never question about anything, and we just kept rolling. And for a couple of years there, everything felt right, even though it was torture, like they call it. But we won 3 championships out of 5 years, and a lot of things went right for us.
Now, speaking about right, sometimes a lot of things tend to go wrong for a long period of time with a team. And when things, and you guys probably didn't have a lot of this, but when things went wrong for a couple series and, just wasn't clicking along, what did Bochy do? How did he handle that? Did he have team meetings? Did you talk to the team? How did any special things that helps coaches? Because they're going to run the same thing with their kids or with their college teams.
Right. So Bochy was not big on meetings. I'm sorry. The way he tried to handle things for the most part was bring the big guys in, just meetings for 4 or 5 guys. I can name a couple of meetings that, he brought in Posey, he brought in Pence, he brought in
veterans.
The veteran players, Matt Cain, guys like that, into the office. Those guys regulated the clubhouse anyways. And, and then he advised that they should have maybe a players meeting only where, they were his voice into the players meeting, and then he didn't have the coaches involved. So he did things like that a lot, to where the players regulated wells, and in turn they would play and get out of the funk they were in. And numerous times, and Brian Sabin, he was a big part of what we did in San Francisco for a long time, and he was also vocal and visible in the clubhouse, on the planes, you know, always around the ballpark, talking to players, making sure the guys were doing the right thing. So those two guys were connected to the hip as well. And between them two, I think there was a lot of the great things that were done in San Francisco. And they did it that way. You know, they had small meetings. You know, every once in a while, we'll have a whole group meeting. But I think that they prefer to do it the other way.
You know, take us into Hensley Meulens. We're almost coming to the end here. I want to take you into you as the manager of the Netherlands, and, you know, during the games. Now, it's a different type of situation internationally, but during the games, take us into your thought process. What you're thinking during the game all the time?
Well, as you know, you got to be more prepared for those games, because there's rules. There is pitch limit rules. There is, you know, that's the most important thing, to manage the pitching. I don't think it's different than the major league game or any game. You have to manage the pitching staff the right way in order to win games. Great pitching coach in Burb Lilleven, Hall of Famer, great bench coach in Andrew Jones, future Hall of Famer. Between those two guys, you know, there was not much that was missed during games. For me, they were watching, and I let Andrew run the bench. And, you know, as the game was going on, I was in tune of what moves I was supposed to be making in terms of what we game plan before the game. Most games were pretty clean. Certain games, you know, you changed the course because of stuff happening that you know, you didn't plan on, especially the last game we played during the Classic in 2017. We were in LA playing the Puerto Rican team, great game, went into extra innings, we lost when they put the runners on the bases there with the tiebreaker, you know, I can see where we pitch our best pitcher in Rick Vandenberg, who's pitching in Japan, who's won championships over there, and he didn't have his best stuff, and he didn't have his best game. He gave up two home runs in the first. I replaced him. I said, "This is not a game plan. We were supposed to attack Korea a different way. We're supposed to attack Rivera a different way, and he went the opposite way, and it cost us three runs." And I proceeded to bring Jared Georges in the game. And he pitched three or four scoreless innings, and it kept us in the game and kept the game from getting out of hand. So I made a decision on the fly to replace my best starter and put another good starter that was an all-star in the major leagues in. And he proceeded to go with the game plan better than the first guy did, and kept us in the game. And we should have won that game. We didn't. But, you know, those were one of the things that I did that changed course of the game during the early part of the game.
You know, I know Hensley Meulens looks at statistics, and I know you guys have a lot of stats in the big leagues. How do you balance making that decision according to stats and according to your instincts?
Well, you know, the stats are fact nowadays. You know, there's no way to hide around them, and I think for the most part, you know, that's how it's gonna come out. But at times, you know, like I just mentioned, you know, I had a gut in my feeling, I changed the pitcher, and it kept us in the game. You know, I can also say the Classic before that, 2013, we're in Japan playing the Cuban team, and we were the visiting team, and There was a rule of thumb: you don't bring a closer in the game in unless you're winning.
Yeah, right.
Right. So, but we went into extra inning that game as well, and I was advised to bring the closer in. I says, no, let's bring this other pitcher in. And Bert looked at me and says, you're out of your mind. We're bringing the closer in the game. And I'm glad I listened, because sometimes the manager has the last say. And I could have said, no, I'm bringing this other guy in. But I listened to Bert, and we brought in Luke Vermeil, God bless his soul. And he locked down the inning. And then we proceeded to beat Cuba. In the next inning, with a sack fly by Colin Sams, Andrew Jones scored, and we went on to the finals in San Francisco that year. So that's gut feeling compared to, you know, just using numbers.
How have you changed in the last 5 years as a coach or even as a manager? What's some things that you may have changed because, you felt like you're getting better at something?
Well, the things that have changed is because, the more and more analytics come in the game, the more you have to use them, especially at the major league level. You cannot just put them aside. They're there to be used, and we use them. Most of the time they work. Sometimes they don't work. But, you know, that's the balance. That's the balance. And, That's how the game has changed the last 5 years. We spent 3-4 hours, looking at numbers in terms of coming up with the right game plan. Now, back in the day, we used to just go by what we knew from the player against the head-to-head matchup. And, we're not just going by head-to-head matchups now. There's all these other metrics that you take in consideration before you go out there. And coach.
Fantastic. Last one, Hensley, and then I'm just going to leave it open. Any advice to players, coaches, and parents in the U.S. around the world when it comes to working with young players? Last one, hardest thing as a coach to deal with? What's the toughest, thing in coaching to deal with? The hardest thing to deal with as a coach?
Okay, so nowadays is the coaches on the side. You know, a lot of players go to these swing coaches and these facilities that working throwing harder or hitting harder or running faster. And at times, it's a different message that what you're giving the player. So you got to know what these guys are telling these players. And these parents are paying a lot of money to these facilities on the side. While they have coaches in their teams, put them on the same thing. We've had cases. This type of situation has helped players out, but there was a lot of times that where it didn't help players out either. So it's just to make sure that there is a balance, that there is a communication between the coach offside and the coaches inside, to make sure that the player is not confused when he has to work on something and actually go out there and deliver.
All right, last thing, advice to parents, coaches, and players around the world when it comes to working with young kids. Some advice of yours that you use with the kid there in Curacao.
Well, is be patient, is keep it fun for them. I know this is the era of throwing 100 miles an hour and launch angling and all that stuff. But make sure that the kid is still having fun on the field. I think, once you realize that it's a game of failure, having fun is a very key part component of playing this game, and also have an ear for the kid, have an ear for the player. Make sure there is a two-way communication between you, as this I think is a formula for success for most kids.
All right, fantastic. That is Sir Hensley Mullins, Mets bench coach, 3-time World Series champion, just an overall super person. We want to thank you so much, Hensley, for being on the show, man. I appreciate it. I know you had a 2-hour, Zoom call with the Mets, and now you're here. Then you got your kid's birthday. That everybody wants to wish him a happy birthday. So thanks for joining, man.
All right, thank you.
All right, folks, Hensley Mullins, Pete Caliendo here, Baseball Outside the Box. check us out on baseballoutsidethebox.com, @baseballout on Twitter. Thank you to the Lineup Media Group for hosting the show, our producer, Brian Crack. Thank you, especially to all the fans in the U.S. and around the world who listen to the show. We appreciate it. Please spread the show around to help the game. Stay safe in your homes. Everything's going to be fine. Follow the rules. We'll be back on the field soon. God bless you all. I'm Pete Caliendo, your host. We'll see you on the next show, which is tomorrow. We will have Matt Lyle, the coach that has the most followers on Facebook and Twitter. So we'll see you tomorrow on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.